This episode may contain content of a graphic nature, including descriptions of physical and sexual violence against adults, children, and animals. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tanya.
And I'm Talia.
And we are Crimes and Consequences, a true crime podcast. Hi, Talia.
Hey, Tanya.
How are you?
Oh, God, you ask me that every time.
Do I?
Yeah.
I care.
Okay, well, nobody wants to hear this shit. So I say this all the time. Nobody wants to hear. You really want to know? I don't think so.
Okay, well.
How are you?
I am great.
Okay.
After that. No one really cares. I would like to say welcome back to everyone to another exciting episode. Woo! And I have a crazy, crazy story to tell you today that was suggested by one of our Patreon members, Erica.
Thank you, Erica.
Thank you, Erica. You know who you are. Okay, so I'm just going to get right to the story.
I would like that.
In September of 2009, 16-year-old Emma Niederbrock planned to have her online friend, Richard Psycho Sam McCroskey, visit her at her home in Farmville, Virginia. Emma lived at home with her mother, Dr. Deborah Kelly, who was a college professor who taught sociology and criminology. Her parents were going through a divorce, and her father, Reverend Mark Niederbrock, who was a reverend at a local Presbyterian church, didn't live with them at the time. Mark and Deborah considered themselves to be pretty open-minded parents, so even though they didn't exactly love the fact that Emma was into this type of music that was called horrorcore, do you know what horrorcore is?
No.
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you.
Sounds really fucking scary.
It's a subgenre of hardcore rap music that showcases themes such as death, horror films, violence, cannibalism, Satan worshiping, and human sacrifices.
What?
And because I'm 100 years old, I researched who some of the best horrorcore rappers out there were, and the only one I recognized was Insane Clown Posse.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, you know who they are.
So is this like a genre on Spotify? Like I can go to horrorcore?
I believe you can.
No.
Yeah, I think so.
That seems politically not correct.
You know, some of the articles when I was researching this story said Eminem was
horrorcore,
which they were saying, you know, because he talks about like killing his mom and his ex-wife and things like that, but whatever.
Whatever.
And if you're curious, I will post a link written by the AV Club that gives a great history of horrorcore rap for anyone who's interested.
It'll be some great reading.
It was interesting.
Tonight.
It was interesting to me. Right. I promise. Anyway, back to Emma and her family. Deborah was growing concerned over Emma's obsession with horrorcore music, and the family had started to go to counseling because of it. Emma's parents, who were dismayed over her deep interest in this, grew more disturbed when she started writing weird messages on her bedroom wall, such as, quote, kill the fetus, fuck you, Jesus.
What?
I'd rather be dead, because your faith is meaningless.
What the? Wow. That's edgy. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, God damn. I don't know what I would do if I saw that in my
I know, right?
What? In my daughter's bedroom.
Your 16-year-old daughter.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Mark and Deborah knew that Emma had made plans with her online friend, Richard, because I'm going to call him Richard. I refuse to call him Psycho Sam.
I kind of like it, though.
She had made plans with him to go to this horrorcore festival called Strictly for the Wicked, which was located in Southgate, Michigan.
Oh.
It was here in September 20.
It's like an hour away or something. Yeah,
it was here in 2009. They decided the best thing they could do to keep an eye on Emma was to drive her and Richard to the event and have everyone stay at their home in Farmville. So they both went on the drive to this festival in Southgate. The plan was set that Richard would fly from his home in California to Virginia and then travel with the Niederbrocks to Michigan for the event. Coming with Emma and Richard was another online friend Emma had made from West Virginia, 18-year-old Melanie Wells. Melanie's online name was Mrs. Free Abortions. Emma's online name was Ragdoll. And she and Emma had been introduced to one another by a horrorcore artist they both liked named Razakel. Razakel, who was a woman, had developed a relationship with both Emma and Melanie separately. And when she figured out they both lived kind of near one another, she introduced them. Soon Melanie and Emma developed a friendship online and found out they both enjoyed photography, doing hair and makeup, And so they chatted online through MySpace. Remember MySpace?
Oh, yeah, that's old school.
Yeah. They also had another thing in common. Both of their dads were Presbyterian ministers. Melanie listed online her interests were cigarettes, alcohol, lust, restorative arts, which
lust?
Lust.
That's an interest?
Yeah, I guess. Restorative arts, which I'm not sure exactly what that means. Blood and gore and open graves. So she's a spooky girl.
Open graves. Does she really like that or is it all just shit?
I don't know.
That's what I wonder. If she saw a fucking open grave, would she be like, oh, that's so
cool? Oh, that is so cool.
Or would she be a little worried?
I'd be a little weirded out. At least I would. I don't know. When Richard was picked up from the airport, he was immediately smitten with Emma. This was the first time they were meeting in person, and they were really excited to finally meet face-to-face. Richard had been referring to Emma as his online girlfriend to people back home, but Emma didn't exactly have the same mutual feelings, despite the pair sending each other flirty messages online, like, constantly. According to Razakel, Emma never called Richard her boyfriend and only told her that they were close friends online and were getting closer. Richard was excited to meet Emma not only because of this blossoming online relationship, but he thought meeting her would give him some much-needed happiness in his life. At home, his life kind of was falling apart. About 5 months prior to this, his dad had asked his mom to leave their home, and he was pursuing getting a divorce. On September 7th, shortly before they were to meet in person, Emma wrote on Richard's MySpace page, quote, "The next time you check your MySpace, you'll be at my house. I love you so much, baby, forever and always. You are my one and only everything."
And they've never met?
And they've never met. "I can't wait to see you, baby. It's like 6:17 a.m. and I've been up since 4-ish, filled with uber amounts of excitement. I can't wait. I leave to pick you up in 5 hours. Gah, my insides feel all squishy." End quote. However, when Richard finally arrived in Virginia, he instantaneously wore his heart on his sleeve and seemed to be needy, shy, and vulnerable, which was the exact opposite of the person who Emma thought Richard was. She told Melanie he wasn't nearly as cool, tough, or good-looking as he appeared online, and she was extremely disappointed.
Surprise!
I know. And while Richard was smitten, I told you, Emma was aloof at their first meeting. Definitely a recipe for disaster. Richard and Emma had dated for more than a year online and developed quite the complex relationship. They had pet names for one another, inside jokes. He thought she was smart and beautiful and loved that she thought of him as this badass, hardcore, horrorcore rapper. Because in case you didn't realize, Richard is this blossoming horrorcore rapper.
All right.
He was in love with her and thought of her as someone who would never let him down. Richard was crushed at this rejection when they first met because he had built up this meeting in his mind to be something that was going to change his life. Sadly, it was a meeting that definitely changed everyone's lives forever, but not in the way Richard had initially hoped. When they finally arrived at the concert, after the 10-hour drive on September 12th, Emma spent most of her time flirting with other guys and avoiding and ignoring Richard, according to witnesses at the concert. Richard's sister eventually told people that Richard's friends had told her that Richard said he and Emma had an argument at the concert, with one rumor being that the argument was caused because Emma received a flirty text from another guy at the concert, and Richard had seen the text. Looking at Richard's online persona, it's clear he lived in a fantasy world that he created. He portrayed...
Don't we all?
I know, right? Sorry. Girl. He portrayed himself as this tough rap artist, this Psycho Sam, and projected an image of being in control and confident, which is obviously what attracted Emma to him. Some of his stupid music can still be found on YouTube, by the way, and I'll post the link in the show notes.
I'm sure it's brilliant.
Oh, girl. In his music, he makes references to the voices in his head, these evil voices that tell him to murder and go on a killing spree. Yeah. There's also a YouTube video of him bragging about defiling a grave of a U.S. Korean War veteran.
Well, that's awfully specific.
And how right after he did it, when the video starts, it's raining as a punishment for the act. I'll actually play you the clip.
Okay.
"We defiled the grave. And then lightning struck seconds ago. I think we're being warned. And now it's starting to rain. It's because of me. It's not my fault.
And look at the one inside there.
And now it's starting to rain really hard. So, peace, Negroes.
All right.
Did he really defile that grave? Because I'm so pissed right now.
Yeah, he did.
I'm very sensitive about the veterans.
Yes, I know. Very sensitive. Extremely pissed, especially when I saw the name on the grave. You can see it. And, you know, it says he's a Korean War veteran. And these punk-ass kids are just being dickheads.
How do they think that's cool?
I don't know. The comment embedded in the video says, quote, "We went to a graveyard and I decided to be an asshole and flip a cross upside down on somebody's grave. Then we were striked down with lightning, LOL. And yes, I can say Negroes because, you know, I'm black." End quote.
Okay.
But Richard's a white kid, by the way.
That's right.
Yeah.
What is this?
I don't understand.
Okay,
it at
I don't
all.
Get the world, but.
Whatever. He's a punk ass. After the horrorcore concert event, whatever you want to call it, Emma, Melanie, Richard, and Emma's parents returned to Emma's home in Farmville, Virginia, which is about 60 miles west of Richmond. It's considered a college town. There's a couple universities there. Once they arrived back home, Richard, who was not supposed to return home to California for several days, began to plot his revenge on Emma. Before he left home, Richard had bragged to his friends about Emma, and he wasn't looking forward to going home now, so he was just stewing in his vengeful thoughts upon their return to Farmville. He was hurt over the rejection and the supposed betrayal he suffered at the hands of Emma, and it was just more than he could bear. However, when everyone returned to Farmville the day after the concert, everything seemed to be okay. Both Emma and Melanie logged onto their MySpace accounts, and at 2:43 a.m. on September 14th, Melanie posted about how she would be home on September 16th and how she missed everyone at home. When September 16th came and went, and Melanie didn't return home as expected, Melanie's mother, Catherine, contacted the Farmville police to do a welfare check, saying she had not heard from Melanie since September 14th and she didn't come back on the 16th that she had promised. Catherine told police that she had also contacted Emma's father, Mark, and he was going to go by the house to check on the girls. Officers visited the Niederbrock home, and Richard met them at the door and told the officers that the three had gone to the movies, so the cops left. I'm going to play you a clip of Melanie's mother's phone call with police after this first visit.
Goodwill? Yeah. This is Farmville Police Department. Okay, did you just speak with somebody at the residence?
Yes, I just spoke with, I guess, the daughter's boyfriend.
Okay, well, I don't know. My sergeant went over there, and he said that it was a young kid, a boy, and that Melanie and the girl she's staying with are at the movies now. Yesterday, they went to Richmond. Vehicle had broken down, and the cell phone's dead, and that kind of thing. So is that what he talked to you about?
What he told me, yeah. And like I said, I don't know where the mother is. I don't know where, I mean, she's usually the one that, I guess, drives them around, and she's just disappeared. I haven't spoken to her at all. The father I talked to earlier on today,
right?
He said that he was on his way. As a matter of fact, he was on the road when I was talking to him. He was going through Farmville. He was supposed to stop at the house. I haven't heard from him since.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm at this point, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to think at all.
Okay.
You know, and him being at the movies, I just tried to call. He said that Emma tried to call, or just called him from the movies. And I tried to call the phone that he said she called from. There's no answer. It goes right into it.
Okay.
So, you know, Melanie's mom, Catherine, is trying to explain that she can't get a hold of Melanie. Richard said they went to the movies. You know, she sent Mark over there. Melanie's father even visited the home, but got no answer when he knocked. He actually sat there for about 8 hours in the driveway and nothing was going on.
Wait, he sat there for 8 hours?
The dad did. Melanie's dad did.
Wow. I mean, that's a really, really long time.
Yeah, and they haven't heard from Melanie, so her parents are now frantic. And as a last resort, they call Rezical to see if she's heard from Melanie. But she told Melanie's mom, well, the last time I saw Melanie was at the concert. It seemed everywhere that Melanie's parents looked, it was a dead end. They did manage to get a hold of Richard on the phone twice. However, they got an uneasy feeling from him because he gave them differing answers as to where the girls were when they asked, why they couldn't come to the phone. Eventually, Melanie's mother called the police again on September 17th when she still hadn't heard from her daughter. I'm going to play that.
This which doesn't make sense. I mean, my daughter would call.
Right.
So I just don't know what to think. What scared me earlier, she was saying, oh, there's noises. There was noises in the basement coming from, you know, in the house. I don't know.
All right, if you don't hear anything from her, then just call us back and I'll send an officer back over there.
Okay. Yeah, it just seems, like I said, it doesn't make, none of this makes, any sense at all. I've heard that, you know, they were supposed to be home by 9 this evening and then 10 and then, you know, so I don't know.
All right, well, just try to, you know, wait and see if Melanie calls you in the next hour, and if not, call us back.
I will. Thank you so much for your help.
Okay, you're welcome as well. All right, bye-bye.
So after she makes this call again, Kathleen called Richard and insisted that he call the police since he told her again that the girls weren't home. So guess what?
What?
Richard does call the police.
Well, good.
As Catherine asked, and I'm going to play you that call.
Oh, I don't know.
Hey, can I have a police unit come by my house? Because I keep hearing sounds in the basement. Now I'm scared to go down there and check what it is.
Okay, what kind of sounds do you hear?
Like just noises, like something moving around down there. I think it's the dogs, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We have two dogs, but one of them is upstairs. I just put them up there, and the other one might be down there, but I'm not sure if it's the dog or not.
Okay, and it's in the basement. What's your name?
Sam.
Sam?
But this isn't my house. I'm staying at my girlfriend's house.
Okay. All right, we'll get somebody to come up there, okay?
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
It's kind of weird.
All right.
So after this call, the police do show up. They go out back to the house and they search the basement this time and they found nothing and left. While the police were there, they didn't ask to see Melanie, Emma, or her parents, but they did talk to Richard. So Kathleen calls the cops again.
Yes, I don't know who I need to talk to. My daughter is with a family in Farmville, Virginia. And she's been basically missing for the past 2.5 days. I can't get a hold of her. Her cell phone's turned off. What's worse is the girl that she was staying with, nobody knows where she is. Her cell phone is turned off. This daughter's boyfriend is staying there, and I've talked to him several times today, and I've gotten different stories. But my husband went down. He was supposed to pick up my daughter yesterday. And he went down there. He arrived at about 11 o'clock in the morning. He sat there for 8 hours outside the house. Nobody showed up. Nobody answered the door. And, I mean, we're about 4 hours away here, and I don't know what else to do.
Okay, is your husband still here in Farmville?
No, he's home. He came home.
Oh, okay.
He was going to head back down there tomorrow to pick her up, but everybody seems to disappear off the face of the earth, and I just don't know what to think. And I checked the cell phone records with my cell phone company. The last time she used her cell phone, 1:28 in the morning on September 15th. And actually, somebody called in and left her a voicemail.
Eventually, due to Kathleen's urgings, the police went back out to the home on September 18th, and this time they were overwhelmed by the smell of decay that was emanating from the house.
How many days had it been?
It had been 4 days.
Oh, okay.
Probably more 2.5 days, okay? But it had been 4 days, I think, since they went to the concert. They finally decided they had these urgent circumstances. And they entered the home without a warrant.
Exigent. I can never pronounce it in law school. Still can't today.
This is when they stumbled upon what was described by one of the police officers as a slaughterhouse. And before I tell you more, we're going to take a break. So you want to hear what the police discovered?
Yeah, but there's something I've been wanting to say throughout this whole episode.
All right.
Farmville does sound like a Stephen King book.
Oh my God, it does. You're right.
Right?
Yeah, it'd be like a sleepy little town.
Farmville,
Virginia.
Someone's car breaks down in Farmville and they're never seen again.
I know.
That's what I'm imagining.
Ugh. I'm sure it's a lovely place.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Beautiful.
Police discovered that on September 15th, 3 days prior, Richard had murdered Emma, her friend Melanie, and her mother Deborah with a maul hammer in their sleep. They had no defensive wounds. Richard then remained in the house with the bodies of the three people he killed for 2 days before Mark stopped by the house on his way to a meeting in Richmond. And that's when he was contacted by Kathleen, where she had asked him, you know, can you check on the girls? Richard met Mark at the door of the home, and he attacked him from behind with the maul hammer that he had used to kill Emma, Deborah, and Melanie. Mark didn't try to defend himself from the blows, and it was probably because he was ambushed when he came through the door.
Right, I mean, he's certainly not just taking it because he's got the will to live.
Exactly. The attack on Mark was so vicious, the hardwood floor was damaged, and Mark's blood soaked through it. Mark and Melanie's bodies had been moved to Emma's room downstairs in what police believe was Richard's attempt to clean up. It's amazing to me that police didn't notice anything amiss when they came to check out the basement.
I know, I was thinking that myself.
I know, especially when the neighbors later complained that they could smell something rotting from outside of the home.
This is literally just like a horror movie, mm-hmm, for real.
Mm-hmm. I mean, why didn't the police smell anything?
This is just craziness.
Like, I'm trying to think, maybe the basement had its own entrance and they only went in the basement, but the police aren't going to show up at some back door entrance. They're going to show up at the front door. Yeah, I don't get it.
I have no answers.
I don't get it. By the time the police found the bodies, Richard was long gone. He had stolen Mark's car.
Well, I mean, that's weird because he'd been hanging out for days.
Thank you. Exactly. He had been hanging out for days, but I guess he was like, oh, I got to get the hell out of here. He stole Mark's car. And he tried to make his way to the Richmond airport about 4 a.m. that day before the police showed up, September 18th.
You know what I wonder? How come when the police came, they didn't notice Mark's car?
That's a good point.
Like, Mark's car is there.
Yeah.
Because he went to check, right?
Yeah.
So, they didn't tell, you know what I mean?
They were not paying attention. They're probably thinking, oh, it's fine. Nothing's going on.
Mark's just taking a walk.
Mm-hmm. I know, okay. And Kathleen's, if you remember Catherine from the phone call, she's like, I can't get a hold of the mom. I sent the dad over there, you know, like, you're right. Why did the police not look harder? I don't know. I don't have an answer. The day prior, on September 17th, Richard made a call home and talked to his sister. And he called to check on his family to see if everyone is okay. Like, I don't know if he was putting out the feelers or whatever, but right before he hung up, he said, I love you guys, which sent alarm bells off in his sister's head because they just didn't say those things to one another. However, she said she knew Richard was a kind-hearted person and literally wouldn't kill a spider if she asked him to, so she just shrugged the comment off. Soon after stealing Mark's car, Richard wrecked the vehicle. So now police were called and arrived to make a report. They gave Richard a ticket for driving without a license. And they even hooked him up with a tow truck.
Oh.
They didn't know at this point.
Yeah.
So they help him get this tow truck. And again, he's on his way to the airport since the police weren't aware he's a murderer. I'm not sure exactly how the police didn't notice what the tow truck driver said he noticed about him. The driver's name was Curtis, and he described that Richard reeked with an odor that caused him to drive with the windows rolled down to help him not gag from the smell. He said Richard,
I don't even want to know.
He said, okay. Richard smelled like the devil.
Did he not change his clothes?
No, he didn't.
Was he like laying with them? Like, what is this? Like, why?
I know, it's fucking weird. Rolling down the windows didn't help with the smell much for poor Curtis because he said he gagged at least twice. He dropped Richard off at a convenience store around 6 a.m. Before dropping him at the convenience store, Curtis noticed red marks on Richard's neck and said, hey, how'd you get those? Richard said, oh, my girlfriend gave them to me. And the car that I wrecked? Oh, that was her dad's. Ha ha ha.
Uh-huh.
I know.
Uh-huh.
After being dropped off, you know, he's at this convenience store. That's when Richard calls for a taxi. It was said that Richard hadn't showered or changed his clothes since the murders, and witnesses said his clothes were quote-unquote caked with gore.
Wouldn't the police have known that when they came to the house and talked to him?
Right, or when he got in the car accident?
Oh, yeah.
And if he's smelling to high heaven, so I don't know if this is true.
Yeah, maybe who knows?
I don't know. Maybe it was somebody trying to get their name into the newspaper. I have no idea, but...
He probably stunk all the time anyway. He seems like a stinky guy.
After the taxi picked up Richard and they headed to Richmond International Airport, the taxi was pulled over by police for speeding. Richard was cool as can be during the traffic stop and got out of the taxi at one point to smoke a cigarette while the police and the taxi driver hashed this ticket out. So again, I mean, how many fucking times?
This is like a joke. This is stupid.
How many times is he going to encounter the police? It's crazy, right?
Yes.
In the meantime, Razakel's boyfriend, his name was Andre Scrim, who was also a horrorcore rapper. He went by the stage name Sicktanic the Soulless.
Sicktanic.
Sicktanic the Soulless.
That's clever.
Right? He made a call to the cops. And during this call, he told police that one of Richard's friends had talked to Richard recently and that Richard was acting really upset. He told his friend that he had recently killed someone or maybe even more than one person. Police then finally believed that he was the person responsible for killing Emma, her parents, and Melanie, and they circulated a picture they got of him off his MySpace account. So this is finally when they put two and two together. It took this guy calling.
That's crazy.
I know. When Richard arrived at the Richmond airport, he hid in the baggage claim area until it was time to board his flight.
Which, how do you get in the baggage claim area?
I don't know.
You crawl up through that thing? Or
I know, right? I don't know. His flight actually wasn't until the following evening, so he had a long wait. Long enough for police to find him asleep in the baggage claim area when they finally arrested him.
Like, is he just hanging out where the baggage comes? Or, like, is he hanging out with the luggage? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I'm not sure, but when they arrested him, he was, like, in the area, like, on chairs, because there's a video of it on YouTube.
Oh.
They go up to him and just... basically, like, okay, I'm going to mosey on up to him, like, all easygoing. They weren't like, freeze, motherfucker. They weren't like that. They just go up to him and they grab, like, his backpack. They don't even put handcuffs or anything on them because he walks away with the two cops that went and got him. And I'm like, what the hell? It was bizarre. I'm just going to tell you, it was weird.
Especially considering how violent the crime.
Thank you.
Were. I mean.
I know. It was, I don't know. Anyway. I shouldn't judge, but
you weren't there. You don't know.
I don't know, but it seemed very easygoing. Again, I will post a link if anybody wants to watch it. Richard was arrested, like I said, and charged with two counts of first degree murder and two counts of capital murder. During his interrogation, after his Miranda rights were read, Richard asked for an attorney, and that was the end of that. Richard ended up pleading guilty on all four charges and took a plea deal that ended up saving his life. He could have been sentenced to death, but the plea he accepted gave him life in prison. Specifically, he was sentenced to four consecutive life sentences for the killings.
And how old was he?
20.
Okay.
He also gave up his right to file future appeals in the plea deal. A true motive for the killings was never explained by Richard.
He's just pissed.
Yeah, and when a reporter asked him why he did it, he responded, quote, Jesus told me to do it.
Oh, fuck off, Richard.
Mm-hmm, which...
we all know Jesus would not say that.
Thank you. Thank you. His sister said, oh, Richard's just sarcastic, and he thought that would be a funny answer.
Oh, that's so fucking funny. And this is why I can't stand people.
You know, especially stupid fucking punk-ass kids. They bother me. I fucking hate him. He's a smug little bastard, too. Wait till you see the videos of him, you guys. You're just going to hate him as much as I do. He's just a little...
he was a smug little bastard. Yes. Now he is just a piece of shit in jail, in prison.
Yeah. So no one knows for sure what Richard did in those couple of days he sat in the home with the corpses of his victims.
I don't even want to know.
But it's believed he drank alcohol, took some prescription medicine for migraine headaches that he found in the house. He smoked some weed, and he definitely made a video that I'm going to play a clip from right now.
All right, I'm making this video because it's in my final minutes of being alive. And to anybody that finds this, I want you to tell my parents I love them deeply. And I'm very sorry for doing this. To my brother, Sinister, aka Eric, and Emily, I love you guys deeply, and I'm sorry for going this route. I know I said I'd turn myself in, but I'm not gonna do that. I can't do that. I can't pay those consequences, so I gotta do what I gotta do, which is gonna be over there, you could see that. I'm not gonna tell you what I'm gonna do, because I'm sure you guys know what I'm gonna do. I'm really sorry, but, it came to this. But, I'm gonna get going and, do what I gotta do. I'm gonna pay my consequences. So, my last words before I go. Fuck you to the world. Fuck everybody in it. I can't stand this place. Fuck your god. And no, I'm not a nut rider. But fuck your god. SKR. Wicked intent. For life. Peace.
Alright, what'd you think of that?
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow. So where did he put this video? Is it just something he made and he didn't distribute to social media? Or did he put it out
there? Could you put videos on MySpace? I wonder.
Girl, I don't know. I only found out about Facebook 2 months ago. No, I'm kidding. I don't know.
He did put it somewhere, works. I think. I mean, I don't think I would have been able to find it if he hadn't. So a little more about Richard before we go. Even though there were stories that he was bullied, his sister described him.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I know. His sister said, he was a quiet kid who got along with everybody.
Clearly.
Mm-hmm. He spent a lot of time alone in his room listening to this horrorcore music and playing video games. And, people wanted to blame the music. When we were in high school and shit, they wanted to blame heavy
Metallica.
Metal. Right. Metallica and,
come on.
Judas Priest and shit. So I don't put a lot of stock in that. But
no, I mean, there's a reason why people like that. That's mm-hmm. That's the point. There's something that starts first with the fact that there's a group of people interested in that type of person.
Right.
Like what's going on in their head.
Right.
Some people, it's just a fantasy world.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are like that.
Right.
And maybe they really like the music. I don't know. When Richard decided to become a rapper and went by Psycho Sam, some believe he chose the name because he was involved in a satanic cult. Isn't it always a satanic cult?
Absolutely.
And that he idolized David Berkowitz, or Son of Sam, as you know.
Oh, okay.
Richard also went by the name Lil, Demon Dog.
Shut the fuck up.
And he does have a YouTube channel.
Lil Demon Dog?
Well, Lil Demon Dog.
Oh, thought it was Lil Demon Dog.
No, it would be funny. It should be Lil Demon Dog.
Lil Demon Dog.
Lil Demon
Psycho
Dog.
Psycho Sam.
And he does have a YouTube channel using that name. And that's where I found the video of him defiling the veteran's grave. Again, this is another reference to David Berkowitz because, as you may know, he said he took the orders to kill from a dog named Sam. I'm not going to tell you any more about this little asshole because he doesn't deserve to be talked about anymore. A little bit about Emma. She was homeschooled after leaving middle school and wanted to become a fashion designer. She sometimes made clothes for herself at home and liked to model them for her family. She considered herself goth and wore black clothing. She dyed her hair bright pink and went by the nickname Ragdoll, as aww. I told you before. She was really involved in this whole horrorcore community online and posted often in discussion forums and websites. I also found a couple videos online that had her in it, and I think they were probably from friends that had posted it after she died. Melanie Wells was originally from Louisville, Kentucky, and her family moved to West Virginia when she was in high school. Since the move was a major life event for Melanie, her family allowed her to finish high school at home, so she also spent a lot of time online, which is how she met Emma. She loved music, and her family described her as sweet and friendly. And that is my story of the Farmville murders.
Wow, thank you. That was sad.
Yeah.
It's always sad.
It is. Before we go to Leah, we have some shout-outs.
Shout-outs.
We would like to thank Carrie B., Samantha S., Sonia G, Naomi, Cheryl, Nick, and it's spelled NYK, Tracy B, Laura U, Patricia G, Veronica W, Shawnee S, Felicity Rose.
Nice.
I know that's pretty. Zachary H, Kendra S, Anna T, Kitty Cat Meow Meow.
Meow Meow.
Rick D, Richard L, Jacob S, Janice O, Carmen C, Fallon, Wendy S, Erica with two C's, Mary O, Christina C, Missy L, Tracy C, Amy K, April G, Leah, Christina H, Deanna S, Ava D, Emily S, Shelby K, Laura R, and last but not least, Michelle S.
Woo! Yeah.
Thank you, everyone.
Awesome people.
And in case you're wondering why we're thanking them, you can go to patreon.com/TNTCrimes. And what that is we have a billion episodes that are unreleased. You can sign up to be a Patreon.
Or you can go to our website and you can find information on it too, crimesconsequences.com. Get pictures of all the information, like all of our episodes. You get pictures, you see. We have some online-only episodes. Mm-hmm. They're kind of our earlier, rougher ones. They're free. You can go on our category list and see online only and listen to them. And we have merchandise.
Mm-hmm. You can find all of that on our website. If you listen through the Apple app, you can become an Apple subscriber by just pressing one little button. It's so easy.
Done. Click.
It's the same episodes you find in Patreon.
Yep.
You can find us on social media at Hardcore True Crime on Instagram and Facebook. And I think that's everything.
I feel like that's enough.
All right, Talia, until our next episode.
Don't kill each other.
Bye. Bye.